Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, the conversations, the discussions, the debates, the arguments, the unpleasant banter.
The unpleasant banter.
Continues as it relates to gun control and what we should be doing to prevent or decrease the probability of school shootings. All the while, we have a lot of students who are really struggling with the aftermath of the school shooting and the ongoing conversations about the school shootings.
That's right. One of the things we've heard about school shootings is how they're sensationalized by the news media. Mm-hmm. You have helicopters overhead and children running out of a school building, and it's all over the news, and it's scary for kids.
Right.
Why are you smiling?
I'm not smiling.
You have something on your mind.
No, I'm just, I think about...
No, about me. Not what I'm saying. You're looking at me like, did you forget to button your shirt or something?
No.
Okay. We're okay?
You're so...
I'm a little sensitive this morning.
Self-conscious today.
No, a little tender. A little tender this morning.
Last night was the first time that you and I have had the chance to teach together.
Yes.
Well, side by side.
We're teaching,
classroom three. You were in classroom two. Mm-hmm. And that was fun. Except you left early. You left early. But it's okay.
But I meet every week.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So anyway, we're talking...
That's a side note there.
Stop interrupting me. So it's sensationalized in the news. Mm-hmm. And for children who don't really understand this fully, like especially elementary and some middle school students, the news can be frightening.
Right.
Plus, schools are having practice drills.
Mm-hmm.
And the practice drills also make kids nervous. Again, elementary school students don't fully appreciate... they don't realize that it's a very low probability that there will be a school shooting.
Well, it's so funny, because that's the reason I mentioned us teaching last night, because I'm teaching a research class right now, and we were talking about research designs. And
oh, there was a point in mentioning.
Yeah, of course. There's always a point.
Okay. You just have to stay here.
It's subtle sometimes, but you have to wait.
And it's worth waiting for.
Patience, Richard. I just had a random thought.
These little golden nuggets.
Did you see the post on Facebook that said Dr. Richard Marshall for governor?
No.
Florida governor.
Am I running for governor?
I think so.
This will be interesting.
I want to know what party. So, I don't.
I have to stay quiet.
Greenbacks.
I have to inhibit.
So, wait, what were we talking about? Oh, so...
Why this is so anxiety-producing,
what we were talking about
youngsters.
In class last night is we were talking about the probability, or we were talking about research designs. And so I was using this as an example because the students are interested in it. Some of the students work in schools and things like that. And as we're talking about it, I said, so if this is our idea, if our idea is to implement some strategy to decrease the probability of a school shooting, I said, what mm-hmm. is the main limitation to mm-hmm. any study that we're going to do with that? Now, these students, have not had a research class in however many years since they were in undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
These are all, working professionals who have come back to get their master's degree. You know what the first thing that they said was?
Hmm.
Well, school shootings don't happen often enough for you to really be able to know if...
How did they know that?
I don't know, but it does make me wonder why they know it and people who, are making these decisions... In positions of making these decisions, they don't seem to know it.
I know the answer to the second question.
What's that?
Your students don't have an agenda.
Right.
Policymakers do.
Yeah.
If your goal is to protect the NRA,
mm-hmm.
if your goal is to be anti-gun,
mm-hmm.
then you want to do these studies. If your goal is to be pro-gun,
mm-hmm.
you want to, your students don't have an agenda.
Yeah.
They didn't begin with the conclusion. Right. The trouble with policymakers is too often they begin with a conclusion.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we're not going to do anything about gun control.
Right.
That's my first agenda.
Right.
So.
And so as soon as you start there, well, and we've talked about that.
If you start with the conclusion, then, you know, it limits what kind of research you do.
Right.
That's interesting that they knew that.
I was surprised.
Okay.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Not that I was doubting their...
That bodes well for your class because it means that they're thinking, they're thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, but all of that was a little bit of a tangent to what you were saying that, you know, kids, especially elementary school kids and middle school kids, and but even some high school kids, they don't really appreciate the relative infrequency of school shootings, and so they are extremely anxious about their safety in the school setting.
Right. If you look at the numbers, you know, several weeks ago we discussed the shootings since 1949.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we said there were 33 shootings, multiple 8 or more deaths, and only 6 occurred in schools. Okay. So while they get broad and intense, I think the intensity is the issue. While they get intense news coverage, there's a very low probability that it's ever going to occur in your... So I think the first message we have to give to children is that while they see this on the news, keep in mind, there's a very, very, very low chance that this is going to happen in our in this particular school.
In any particular school, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So...
But kids have a difficult time understanding that.
Right.
Because they are bombarded with information. They're bombarded with, you know... Every school, just about, over the last couple of weeks, has done some form of drill, some form of safety practice for, you know, if there's an unknown person on campus or, you know, some kind of drill for different things. And so all of that elevates anxiety.
Right.
And so we're going to talk about how to help kids dealing with anxiety following some of these traumatic incidents, these traumatic events. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a school shooting, though that's going to be a focus that we're going to have. You know, a lot of times you have to implement some of these things after anything. You know, if there was just a death of a student in the school, a death of a teacher, just for, even from natural causes, you know, that's still a traumatic event.
Right. It would send a shudder through the school.
You know,
hurricanes.
You know, the hurricanes last year that we had here in our area, you know, it caused a lot of anxiety from students.
Yeah. So this isn't the only anxiety-producing event. It's just that the way it's covered in the news, it makes especially young children. And I think when we talk about school shootings, as you and I have talked about we always differentiate between elementary school, middle school, and high school.
Right.
Okay, because the elementary school is very different from middle and high school.
Right.
In the first place, and it's very unlikely that an elementary school student is going to bring a gun to school.
Right, that student.
Less
or
than,
they will, if they do, it's there's not as high a probability of a school shooting.
Yeah.
They'll have it there. You know, there's been reports of elementary school kids bringing guns to school, but that it's to show somebody or to, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. So the whole elementary school situation is very different.
Right.
Okay. So we deal with that a little bit differently. But the first thing we have to remember is that regardless of whether it's a death of a faculty member or a principal, imagine if a school principal would die.
Right.
And for a young child, they see an adult die, that could be my mother, that could be my father. And so they just don't have the cognitive ability to manage the anxiety that those things produce.
Right.
So it is with school shootings. And what we have to remember is that regardless of the event, parents worry more than children.
Right.
In general... Parents worry more than children. And so the first order of business is the adults have to be very careful that they don't pass their anxiety to the children.
Exactly.
I think of lightning and thunder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children are afraid of lightning. Why? Because their parents are afraid of lightning.
Often.
You know, the parents showed fear, so they show fear. Fear of the dark, fear of being alone, fear that somebody's going to come into your house.
Right.
I mean, we pass these anxieties on to our children. So teachers and parents have to be very careful. Step number one, don't pass your anxiety on to the kids.
And that's both through what you say and what
and
you
how,
do.
And how you act.
Because, you know, you may not say that I'm terrified of somebody breaking into the house, mm-hmm. but if your child sees you going through and checking the doors and windows, you know, three or four times every mm-hmm. night, and you know, you're saying things like, "Did you make sure that you set the alarm, or did you make sure that this happened?" Or that, they're going to pick up that same anxiety.
Right. Right. So be careful yeah. about what behavior you're modeling yeah. because your children are going to pick that up. If a teacher is very, very nervous, you're going to pass that on to your students.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah.
Be careful not to do that.
Yeah. So we're going to pull some stuff from two articles from the Child Mind Institute that mm-hmm. was, some of these were just published this week.
Right.
This past week. One is anxiety over school shootings, and the other is how to cope with an anxious child.
Right.
But they both provide some really good insight into anxiety in kids
right.
In general, but especially as it relates to some of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
we've talked before, as it relates to anxiety, that anxiety is a good thing
right.
to some extent.
Right.
You know, you want to be stressed at times and at within a healthy range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the principle that suggests that, you know, if you aren't stressed about something in any way, if you could care less about something, which would in essence mean that you have no stress about it at all, your performance or your interest in it, your desire to do it, is going mm-hmm. to be very, very low.
Right. Anxiety is our body's response
yeah.
to a threat.
Right.
And there's a particular structure in your brain that responds to those threats.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to work just fine.
Right.
Okay. It should happen.
Threats, generally speaking.
Right.
You know, a bear is a threat, but so is an algebra test.
Right. But if you see a bear coming, so you want your brain to respond mm-hmm. so that you can escape or
right.
fight or whatever. Okay. There was a woman in England born without that brain structure.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always doing things that were dangerous and damaged her body. She
mm-hmm.
would pick up hot kettles with
right.
her hands, burning her hands all the time. She finally was killed in her early 30s. She stepped into traffic
mm-hmm.
because she didn't have any anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't recognize, her brain didn't recognize the danger.
Right.
Okay. So it's normal.
And it's not that she couldn't feel those things or that she couldn't sense those things. It's that, you know, she's looking out and she's like, "Oh, I can make it," and she goes.
Right.
But she
didn't
couldn't
have
make it.
She didn't recognize it as a threat.
Right.
Okay. And so, our brains have these little structures in them
mm-hmm.
to respond to a nearby threat.
Right.
And we want that to happen because that's life sustaining.
Right.
You know, your brain is capable of escaping danger.
Right.
Okay. So anxiety is the name we give to our body's response to a threat.
Right. And the other piece of that, sort of to add on to that sentence that you said, you know, your body's response to a threat. Your body responds to a threat whether you want it to or not.
That's right.
It's not a conscious decision.
It's called an obligate response.
Right.
Right.
What he said.
Yeah, it is.
It is an
obligate response.
It is a response that your body just automatically does
mm-hmm.
To keep you safe.
That's right.
I've used this analogy before, but if you're in the woods and there's a bear, you're running away before you are cognizant that there's a bear. The way in which the systems in your brain function, the order in which they mm-hmm. function, the sensory information doesn't get to your cortex where you perceive it as a bear mm-hmm. until after the more internal structures are telling you to get to safety.
That's right. The other place you see this is if you hear something that sounds like a gunshot,
mm-hmm.
people will duck. They'll duck first
mm-hmm.
and then they'll say, "Oh, that was a truck backfire."
Right.
Okay. The conscious
right.
decision occurs after
right.
the life-saving action.
Right.
Okay. And so that's what we mean by an obligate. This is going to happen.
Right.
It's not under conscious control.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about kids, some of this anxiety that they're experiencing, it's not that they're deciding to be anxious about it.
Right.
And it's that their body is saying,
"Doing what is it?
I don't feel safe."
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're very deep structures that make that happen. And so You know, when we talk about parents passing on their anxieties to their kids, again, we're talking about sort of embedding some anxieties into some of these deep structures that it is really difficult. You know, when we see those kids as they become teenagers and adults, mm-hmm. we see them, and these are very deeply ingrained anxieties that are right. really difficult for them to overcome.
That are hard to get rid of because right. they've been doing that anxiety mm-hmm. for 5 or 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And when you do something that long, you right. become very good at it.
And whether they even know that they're doing it or not.
Right.
You know, many kids are scared of the dark. If you ask them, they would say that they're not scared of the dark. Mm-hmm. But if you put them in a situation where they have to walk into a dark room, right. they're not going to do it.
Right. That's right. They'll stop at the door. Yeah. They'll stop in the lighted hallway
right.
before entering a darkened room.
So we have to be very careful of that. And so this leads us, of course, to unhealthy anxiety.
Right. Because what normal anxiety is a good thing.
Right.
Okay. You should be afraid of certain things.
Right.
Okay. You should be afraid of poisonous snakes or poisonous spiders or dangerous animals or dangerous situations. So a certain amount of anxiety is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem is debilitating anxiety
mm-hmm.
when it just stops you and you can't go on.
Right.
You stop thinking and you stop reasoning and you become irrational, what we call irrational mm-hmm. fears. Okay. So what we're concerned about is debilitating anxiety.
Right. Yeah. So anxiety, in the case that we're talking about, anxiety that would prevent a kid from going to school.
Right.
Or anxiety that would prevent a kid from being able to
separate,
relax enough to be able to learn while
right.
at school.
That's right. Or can't separate from parents.
Right.
Afraid to leave the house without some kind of protection. You know, there's all those funny things on the internet now about kids leaving home in a football helmet and bubble wrap.
Right.
You know, because parents yeah. are so concerned. That's debilitating anxiety.
Yeah.
When you won't leave your parents, you won't leave your house, you're afraid to enter the building, you're afraid to separate from your teacher. That's debilitating anxiety. That's
right.
what we're concerned about. So how do we deal with that? How do
right.
we make sure that doesn't happen?
Right. Mm-hmm. One of the things that this article talks about, and this is the article on anxiety over school shootings.
Right. This is the one that was by Rachel Emke.
Rachel Emke is the author, yeah.
E-H-M-K-E. So this
right.
is the first of two that we're going to talk about.
Yeah. One of the things that they talk about is being proactive. And I really like that idea
yes.
because we are very much proponents of
right.
being proactive.
Right.
You know, too often we sit back and we wait to respond to serious incidents
mm-hmm.
or significant events. When being a little bit more proactive can prevent some of those things from happening.
That's right.
And it does get back to that issue that we've talked about before, that when you're proactive and you prevent things from happening, that oftentimes goes underappreciated because
right.
if nothing bad ever happens, then you never know if what you're doing is really working because
right.
nothing bad has happened. Mm-hmm. And so is it not happening because it's just not going to happen right now? Or is it not happening because of your intervention?
And that's what your students meant when they said, it happens so infrequently that you don't know the
mm-hmm.
answer because
right.
these are such isolated and rare events.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about being proactive, we've been talking at length about the brain's response,
mm-hmm.
okay? The other thing about anxiety is that anxiety triggers the fight or flight response. And fight or flight, as the name implies, is I'm either going to run or I'm going to fight. The issue is I'm going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So the other part of responding to threat is I want to do something.
Right.
By being proactive, we are doing something.
Right.
And that gives kids, biologically, that gives kids some, it eases their
some
anxiety.
Agency.
It eases them
mm-hmm.
because it gives them control.
Right.
So by giving them something to do,
mm-hmm.
you're automatically giving them the antidote
right.
for anxiety.
Right. Yeah, and I think we have to be careful how we think about being proactive sometimes, though.
Right.
Because I think that there's an argument that, you know, one of the solutions that has been proposed for dealing with this mm-hmm. that we've talked about before is arming teachers.
Right.
Proponents of that plan claim that this is a proactive strategy because it is doing something now to prevent the likelihood or the probability of somebody coming to the school to shoot. Because if the person who wants to shoot the school, shoot at the school, knows that there's other people there with guns, they're less likely to do it. And so they would see that as proactive. That may be proactive to people of a particular, from a particular persuasion, but it's not. That's not going to be proactive as it relates to the kids, because the, right. the children, the students, and this is elementary, middle, or high school, right. the students are going to very quickly forget that's about right. the idea that somebody on campus is there mm-hmm. with a weapon to protect them. So while it may initially provide some comfort, that is not going to, that is unlikely that it will be sustaining because right.
they're going to forget.
They're going to forget. Right. And mm-hmm. and the whole purpose of the program is that the people with, right. with the weapons are anonymous. Mm-hmm. So we don't know who they are. So right. your school may have somebody with a weapon or they may not. Mm-hmm. We don't know right. because it's all voluntary.
Right. But the what you when we talk about being proactive, what we're talking about is it's not just prevention. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's also that you're giving this message. School children should, especially elementary school children and middle schoolers, should be told, this is our school. We have a plan, in effect, to mm-hmm. keep... Nobody who shouldn't be in the building mm-hmm. will get into our building.
Right.
We have a plan.
Right.
And take them, show them, this is the... These are all locked. So... Mm-hmm. Unless you have a key, you're not going to be able to get into our building.
Right.
So that's the first thing we tell them right. is that we're going to, this is our school. Again, right. it gives them agency. Mm-hmm. It gives them a sense of control. And we have made plans to keep people out of this school
right.
who shouldn't be here.
Right.
Okay. That's.
And I think that a lot of what the kids from the Marjorie Douglas School,
Douglas.
High School, mm-hmm. are doing, you know, what they're doing is being proactive,
right?
In a different way.
That's
you know,
right.
You're what you're talking about is very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at this is what we're doing. This
right.
is what we're doing. You know, another way to be proactive is to is activism.
Take some action.
Right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So you get up and you talk about it and you push those who are decision makers. You push them to make some decisions mm-hmm. that are in
That's
the best
right.
interest of the student body.
And if you're a parent, get involved in the PTA.
Yeah.
Get the PTA to work with the administration.
Mm-hmm.
Take action. That's
right.
what we mean by proactive.
Right.
Take action. Don't just worry.
Right.
Okay. Take action. Do
right.
something.
And that's the difference between what we're talking about and you know the arming teachers movement.
Mm-hmm.
Arming teachers movement is passive for everyone except for the few people that's going to have the
that's
weapon.
Right. That's right.
It's passive for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to resolve some anxiety, you have to take action and because that's what's going to resolve that.
That's right. Because we don't want to just keep schools safe, you know, armed
right.
teachers. We also want to deal with anxiety. We want to
right.
deal with, okay, we want to do all those other things.
Right.
The other thing you can do is have practice drills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's
yeah.
another way. That it gives kids a sense that if something does happen,
right.
I know what to do.
Right.
A lot of the anxiety comes from what do I do? Then
right.
you know we're all going to no. This is what we do. Remember, we've been doing this for generations with fire drills.
Right.
Okay. We talk about duck and cover, but a better example is the fire drill.
Right.
Okay. Kids know where to go. Even little kindergarten and first graders. Everybody knows what to do during a fire drill.
Right.
This is no different from a fire drill.
Right.
And one of the things that professionals are advocating, some people have said, well, we should actually get a gun, somebody with a gun, to demonstrate what to do if there's an active shooter. And they said, no. We don't pump smoke and fire.
We don't set a fire in the school.
Right. So, to have a fire drill. Okay.
Wow.
So, because that would scare the daylights out of most kids. If you see somebody with a gun.
Daylights is one thing it would scare out of them.
Oh,
I'm sure it would
man.
Scare some other things out
so,
of them.
So don't, this isn't a movie scene.
Right.
You know, we've done fire drills without smoke and fire.
Yeah.
And they work just fine.
Right.
Same thing here. There's no need to make this a drama.
Right.
Okay. So don't start bringing not even toy guns into
Absolutely.
A school. Okay.
And the last thing that she talks about is talking to your children.
Right.
And I think that it just as, you know, is the case when doing active drills, you know, what we were just talking about, the active shooter drills. The other thing that we have to do when we're talking with our kids is we have to talk to them at appropriate levels.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do drills, for example, the drill itself, if you're not careful, can cause anxiety as well.
That's right.
Because, okay, now we're practicing it, so, oh my gosh, now it must be a real possibility. You don't want to leave kids, especially young kids, elementary school kids, with that type of impression. So you want to talk with them and say, you know, it's very unlikely that anything like this will ever happen around here, but you know what? We're going to practice. We're going to, you know, you can talk to them about it in a variety of ways.
Right.
You know, you may have never been in a car accident, but it doesn't stop you from putting your seatbelt on.
Right.
It doesn't stop us from being safe in the car. Just because it's never happened. And so so you would talk about these kinds of situations in the same way.
Right.
When parents are talking with their kids about some of these issues, again, you have to be very careful that you don't offer too much, too many details, too much information.
That's right.
There's a difference between being honest and being graphic. Those are very different things. And you can be honest and you can tell them, you know, what happened without going into details about things that are going to worry them or scare them.
That's right. You don't talk to them about asphyxiation or burning up in a room.
Right.
Or, you know, spontaneous combustion. We don't discuss that with a fire drill. There's no need to discuss it with this drill. But you make a good point. When you do these drills, you're going to identify the kids who are highly anxious and who might panic.
Right.
Several years ago, I saw a young boy who, every time the fire alarm went off, he absolutely froze. It got to a point where they would tell his mother, don't bring him to school today because we're going to have a fire drill at 10 o'clock. Bring him in after the fire drill. Well, the other thing that another school did is they knew that this boy panicked, so they assigned a teacher to him during fire drills just to manage him.
Yeah.
So the other thing you're going to learn by doing these practice drills is who are the kids whose anxiety is too easily triggered, and let's manage them too. Okay?
Right.
Deal with their anxiety, but also keep them safe.
And this goes back to the plan that we talked about last Saturday.
Right. Have a plan.
In last Saturday's podcast, we talked about a plan to educate teachers and school professionals so that they know how to identify some of these things, how to identify students with mental health concerns,
That's
with
right.
who are at risk for various things. And if you can identify them, then you can do that same thing.
You can make the necessary accommodations. You know, I think of children with autism or children with physical disabilities who can't move.
Those
the
with
way
sensory
we need,
issues.
Sensory deficits.
All kinds of stuff.
So we identify them during the practice drills, and that's very, very useful.
Right.
So.
Now, the other article that we're going to talk about is entitled What to Do and Not Do When Children Are Anxious. This is by Dr. Clark Goldstein.
Right. Yeah, because there are going to be kids who just have this debilitating anxiety, and we all need to, when I say we, I mean parents and teachers, need to deal with that level of debilitating anxiety.
Right.
So these are what I think it's Dr. Goldstein, isn't it, Clark Goldstein?
Yeah.
Dr. Goldstein, what he does here is he gives us 10 really useful ways of dealing with this kind of debilitating anxiety.
Right. And I love the first one because I can't I can't even estimate how many times I've said this about anxiety, about anger, about depression, about all these things. And that is, the goal isn't to eliminate anxiety.
Right.
It's just to help the child manage it.
That's right. That's what we should be doing. If you're a parent of a child with anxiety, you're not going to, you don't get, your goal isn't to eliminate it or take it up. You could, because you can't. Remember what we said at the beginning of this program, the brain is doing this regardless of what you want it to do, whether you're a child or a parent. The brain is doing what the brain does. Because remember, this is supposed to happen. It's just not supposed to happen under these circumstances. Okay. So with that in mind, you're not going to eliminate it. What your goal is to help your child manage it.
Right. The second thing is to resist the tendency to avoid things just because they make the child anxious.
Right.
You know, anxiety is one of those really interesting experiences where the common solution to the anxiety is also the issue that perpetuates the anxiety. So if you're anxious about going to school, that anxiety is relieved by not going to school, which means tomorrow when it's time to go to school, you're going to be even more anxious about going to school because you know that yesterday you didn't go to school and it relieved the anxiety, and so it perpetuates itself and really becomes significant. And this is, you know, we see this a lot in disorders such as like agoraphobia and some of and various specific phobias, because the person works so hard to avoid the thing that causes the stress or the anxiety or the panic that they inadvertently make their panic or their reaction to those stimuli even more significant.
So we have to
expose ourselves to those stimuli.
In fact, the treatment for anxiety is exposure therapy.
Exposure therapy.
You have to confront it and manage it.
Right.
Okay. The urge is to relieve the anxiety, especially if you're dealing with your own children, to relieve the anxiety. I don't want my child to suffer. That's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
The thing to do is to help your child manage it. Convince your child he or she can overcome it.
And we do this in lots of different therapies. So, you know, if a student or a child has sensory integration issues and they go see an occupational therapist and the child is sensitive to touch and those kinds of things, what is the therapy?
Right.
Brushing and touching and putting different fabrics and textures on the skin to get the kid more accustomed to and associated with those things. So exposure therapy is really important. So don't stop doing things just because it causes some anxiety. Number three is to express positive but realistic expectations.
Right.
And I do really like that idea as well, because, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about positive psychology and the idea of positivity in general. It is important to be realistic, though. You know, we've talked before about, you know, the idea of trying to teach our kids, you know, you can be anything that you want to be.
Right.
Not always.
Right.
You know, you can't always. If you get car sick driving to the store, it's probably not very likely that you're going to be a fighter pilot.
Right.
You know,
you just don't have the vestibular system to be a fighter pilot.
There's lots of other things that you can do in that area.
That's right.
But probably
your brain
not that.
Can't handle that sort of movement.
You know, if you can't handle, if you don't like chemistry or biology, you're probably not going to be a physician.
Right, and we see that all the time. We have kids, I hate science and math, but I'm going to go to medical school.
Yeah.
Not if you hate science and math, you're not.
You're going to do a lot of science and math.
Right,
in medical school.
It's about science and math.
So setting positive but really realistic expectations is important.
And in the case of school shootings, what's realistic is it's highly unlikely that it's going to happen. Okay, that's a realistic expectation. Okay.
Exactly.
So let's deal with what's really real.
Well, it's unlikely that it's going to happen, and you know the realistic expectation is you're doing practice drills.
That's
you know what to do. You know how to respond in those kinds of situations, and so you know it's unlikely to happen. If the unlikely occurs, you have a plan, you know what to do, and so
we
have various levels of preparation.
We're expressing the positive.
Right.
This is what we're going to do.
Right.
Not likely that it's going to happen, but in the event that it does, we're prepared.
Okay? Yeah.
We're working on the positives.
Absolutely.
Okay? And this is the one that this is one of the ones that I really like. You know?
Number four is respect her feelings, but don't empower them.
Don't let the anxiety take over.
Right.
Okay. It's okay to say, I understand how you feel. I get it. Okay.
Right.
But you're wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, in a sense, what you're saying is, I understand completely. However, you can't let the emotion rule your life. It's what we said earlier, that you still have to go to school. You still have to be able to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to be able to separate from your parents or other adults. You still have to walk into dark rooms once in a while.
Yeah. And the conversation you have with your kid about this is going to be strongly dependent on how old your kid is and how, you know, their overall cognitive skills and things like that. A first grader who's really anxious about this is going to be like, I understand you're really scared, but, you know, we need to get dressed and go to school.
Right.
If you have a high schooler that's really anxious about it, you say, I understand how you feel, but we still have to go to school because, you know, it's not very likely that it's going to happen, but you can have a little bit more detailed conversation as the kid gets older. when you're talking about really young kids, again, as we talked about earlier, you're not going to go into the same type of detail in those conversations.
Right.
You're going to validate them. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand how you feel.
Right.
I can see how you'd be a little bit nervous about that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Everything's going to be okay. Let's get ready to go to school.
Right.
And you're leaving it with that.
And you're giving the child the confidence to go. Mm-hmm. You're not saying to the child, well, if you say to the child, yeah, maybe you better stay home.
Mm-hmm.
That child is going to interpret that as, hey, maybe there is something I should be afraid of.
Because mom's scared about it too.
Mom's afraid of it too.
Yeah.
If she's afraid, I should be afraid.
Right.
Okay. So that's the problem with giving into the fear.
Right.
When a parent gives into the fear,
right.
is that you're saying to the child, yeah, it might be dangerous there.
Right.
Now you have a real problem because
right.
their anxiety is feeding off your anxiety mm-hmm. or what they see as your anxiety.
Right. And as I just kind of did the example of, you know, I understand you're really scared. Mm-hmm. I can see what you're saying,
right.
but we need to get ready to go to school.
Right.
The way that the tone and the presentation of that mm-hmm. isn't frustrating. It's not accusatory. It's not mm-hmm. confrontational. It's, mm-hmm. I understand.
Right.
But we still have to go to school.
I get it. I mean, you allow them to have the feeling.
Right.
Because until they have it, they're not going to deal with it.
And
remember, what we want to do is we want to manage it, not
right.
get rid of it.
You don't want to say, you don't have to be worried about that.
That's right. No, you have to allow them to have it.
Right, right.
Because that's the only way they're going to manage it,
right.
is if they own it.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. Number five, mm-hmm. when you're talking to your kids, you do not want to use leading mm-hmm. questions.
Right.
You don't, and parents do this all the time, and it's difficult to appreciate, but you don't want to ask questions like, are you really anxious about going mm-hmm. to school today? Does school make you really nervous?
Right. Are you afraid of some test? Are you afraid of some class? You know,
yeah.
Are you afraid of PE? Is something bad happening at school?
Mm-hmm.
Is somebody bothering you at school? Kids are going to panic and say, yeah, that's what it is. They're going to feed off your leading
mm-hmm.
questions. And if they think they can find one that you're
right.
concerned about, then they're going to use that.
Right.
Okay.
So. And that's, it's not because they're being manipulative.
Right.
It's because they may have no idea what they're really anxious about.
Now
you're labeling it for
that's
them.
That's exactly right. What I do with children is frequently children will have a sort of a kind of what we call free-floating
mm-hmm.
anxiety.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There really isn't anything there.
Right.
There's nothing at school that they're afraid of. They would just rather stay home, okay? Which is understandable.
Sure.
Okay? So by having the child, by forcing the child to articulate it,
mm-hmm.
by making them say, I'm afraid of
mm-hmm.
PE.
Right.
Now you have something to talk about. Okay, what is it in PE?
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid of spelling. I'm afraid of the teacher.
Right.
Now you have something to work with. If you're feeding them suggestions, then you're answering their questions.
Right.
No, you must put them in a position where they have to articulate
right.
it. If they can't come up with something very specific mm-hmm. and convincing,
right.
then there's no reason why they can't go.
Right.
If they are being bullied, you want to know that. If they're being right. victimized, if they're being tormented by somebody,
right.
if there is a real problem, they should be able to articulate, even a first or second grader could
mm-hmm.
articulate that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
If they can't, then it's probably just sort of free-floating stuff that I'd
right.
rather stay home.
Right. Mm-hmm. Number six is not to reinforce the child's
right.
fears. And this is pretty consistent with the
right.
One that we talked about a moment ago with respecting their feelings but not empowering them.
Right.
You don't want to reinforce their fears. Yeah. You know, you should be scared of that.
I would be scared too.
I'm
scared. I was scared of that when I was... I'm terrified of that.
Maybe that is something
we should
be afraid of.
Right.
You know, you don't want to do those kinds of things because, again, if I'm worried about it, and now my parent, who is supposed to be this courageous, person, is also afraid of it.
Right.
Wow. Then
there must be
a danger.
Right.
So, number seven is encourage
yes.
the child to tolerate her anxiety.
That's right. We said earlier, the goal is not to eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have some, okay? But you have to learn to tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
there's
nothing wrong with it. Okay,
yeah.
As long as it doesn't become debilitating. Yeah, you might be. I understand you're a little bit worried. It's okay. You're safe. Everything's good.
Yeah.
Teach them how to tolerate some anxiety, because if they get the feeling they shouldn't have any,
mm-hmm.
then there's just going to be this constant surge.
Right. Then they become anxious about being anxious.
Right.
Exactly. And then that just perpetuates things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I really like number eight, because number eight is to keep the do your best to keep the anticipatory period short.
Right.
You know, the we talk a lot in therapy about anticipatory anxiety.
Right.
You know, and you see this from birth just about. You know, some of the very first times that your baby goes to the pediatrician, mm-hmm. for example, they begin to associate going to the pediatrician with getting a shot.
Right.
You know, yeah. So yeah. So going, you have, I could not work in a pediatrician's office, you know, because there's babies crying in the waiting room all the time,
right.
because they're there and they know that they're there to get a shot. Now, we know, but the kids don't know, that the anxiety about getting a shot is far worse than getting the shot.
That's right.
The shot lasts a few seconds, mm-hmm. if that.
Right.
But they will cry, that anticipatory anxiety, that right. anticipatory stress about getting the shot can last for an hour, depending on how long you're there.
The anticipation of a holiday mm-hmm. is always better than the holiday.
Right.
The anticipation of a shot is always worse than the shot itself.
Right.
Right.
You know, you see kids, my son had a big midterm the other day, and the days leading up to it, it was just, you could see the pressure and the weight on his shoulders. And
then I saw, expect all these.
And then I saw him last night, and he was himself again.
Because it was over.
Because the test was over.
Right.
You know, and it, you know, he didn't like the test.
Right. But he also managed
the test
his anxiety.
Done. Yeah. You know, you're right. He worked to manage the anxiety.
It didn't overwhelm him right. to the point where he had test anxiety and he wasn't able to think clearly.
Right.
He's learned how to manage that anxiety.
Right.
You're not going to eliminate it.
Right.
But now he knows how to manage it.
Exactly.
Right.
Number nine is to think things through with your child.
Right.
And again, if we pull some of these different things together, we're communicating with our child. We're not asking leading mm-hmm. questions. We're not reinforcing their anxiety. We're acknowledging it, but not reinforcing it. And so we're talking with them about it in mm-hmm. a way that helps them process and
That's
get
right.
through it.
That's right. We have not had a school shooting in our community.
Right.
In fact, most communities have not had a school shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say that to your child.
Right.
Well, honey, we've never had one here. Yeah, but we could. Of course we could.
And then you say, we could.
Absolutely.
If we did, what would we do?
Then you go to the next one.
Right.
Then you become proactive.
Right.
Right.
And
so what are we going to
agency.
Do if? Oh, well, you've been practicing that at school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're really in control of things at school.
Yeah. It sounds like you have a pretty good plan.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you talk it through with them, but let them guide it.
Mm-hmm.
You it's a very Socratic method.
Right.
So you're asking questions
right.
and letting the child come to their own conclusion.
Right.
But you're guiding them with your questions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, number mm-hmm. 10 says, try to model healthy ways of handling anxiety.
Right.
And again, you know, kids learn more from what they see than what we
mm-hmm.
tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they see you implementing strategies right. to reduce anxiety, whether it's going for a walk, it's using a meditation app, or it's mm-hmm. something that you're doing to
right.
decrease your anxiety, they're much more likely to embrace that as well.
That's right. And you're teaching them, you know, we always say, teach, mm-hmm. don't punish. You're teaching them how to deal with it.
Right.
You know, well, I'm kind of worried about this, so here's what I'm going to do.
Right.
I'm kind of worried about this, so this is what I'm going
mm-hmm.
to do. And it's always, this is what I'm going to
right.
do. It's, again, that proactive approach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be verbal about that.
That's right.
You know,
say it out loud.
It's great to go on your meditation app and
right.
and meditate. But if your kid has no idea that that's what you're doing, it's
mm-hmm.
not really going to be good modeling for them.
Right.
But not that you want to go and interrupt them while they're playing Xbox and say, you
mm-hmm.
know what, mommy's anxious right now, I'm going to go do my meditation app.
Right.
You don't want to do that. But if they can see you anxious, if they see you in a situation
mm-hmm.
where you're feeling that way and you say, man, I'm feeling really anxious right now. I need to do something to help get rid of this anxiety.
Right.
So I'm going to, you know, listen to some of this music, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that to help relieve that anxiety. That is what's really important
right.
for them.
Yep.
Make it a very natural thing. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So,
yeah, but I have two news stories that I want to talk about this morning.
What?
Are we allowed?
I guess.
Okay, I won't.
Depends on what the news stories are.
It's okay.
You see?
Censoring me again.
What?
No, there are two news stories that relate to this.
Okay.
Okay, one is there was a budget signed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
A new budget. It's been proposed.
On the 21st of March.
21st of March.
Yeah.
Right. Because we have another government shutdown looming, I
right.
think sometime...
Right.
The current, soon. And so to avoid that, a $7 trillion budget has been approved. We have bipartisan approval for the budget.
Okay.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is because in our shows, we've talked about the Dickey Amendment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Dickey Amendment made it illegal
mm-hmm.
to fund research
right.
that in any way advocated mm-hmm. gun control.
Right.
I'm happy to announce
mm-hmm.
that in the new budget are monies, over $1 billion, to study guns as a public health issue.
Fantastic.
So the first time since 1996 that the federal government is now allowed to
mm-hmm.
and funded to study gun violence.
Perfect.
Okay, so that's a piece of good news.
Yeah.
Okay, we're very happy to hear that. So hopefully that will translate into mm-hmm. Some action. The second thing worth, and the reason I mentioned the second thing is because it shows why we have some of the problems that we have
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
schools. And we've said this before, that when interventions are developed,
right.
they should be developed by people who know
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what they're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
So many times educational policies are driven by state legislators rather than educational experts.
I know
teachers,
this new story.
Teachers are not consulted.
Right.
Okay. We just, here, well, you're going to do this testing now.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a good idea? No, not the way it's implemented.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And one of the reasons is because specialists,
right.
people who know, aren't
mm-hmm.
brought in. This whole issue of arming teachers,
mm-hmm.
which has become the darling of at
mm-hmm.
least politicians, okay,
mm-hmm.
that were the solution to school shootings is we're going to arm teachers,
right.
okay? The Secretary of Education is Betsy DeVos, and I am not a fan of Betsy DeVos. I don't think she should have been appointed. She knows nothing about, she has no background in education.
Right.
She's a proponent of privatizing schools, and she just has no business being there. What she has done, she's appointed a commission
mm-hmm.
to study gun violence and to study arming teachers to set
mm-hmm.
that policy, and she has appointed three or four other members, and they're all cabinet members. They're
right.
the head of Homeland Security and Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General. These people know nothing about how schools operate.
Right.
And again, when we bring people in like that who know nothing about how schools work,
right.
who don't know what needs to be done at the elementary, middle, and high school level, that's when you get interventions and policies that don't work, and you end up with unintended consequences.
Right.
So I'm hoping that this
yeah.
group of four don't do a lot of damage. It's too important an issue, okay? And
right.
get the experts, get people who know this stuff,
right.
know what they're doing to solve these problems. Because if people who don't know what they're doing are start advocating solutions, we're going to end up with the wrong solutions.
Yeah.
And there's just too much at stake here.
Absolutely.
You know, you're talking about putting guns in the hands of teachers.
Right.
You know, there's a lot at stake here.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Absolutely.
So,
those
two new news stories. We'll try to keep up with that stuff and keep you posted. But
that's
very
great.
Encouraging about money being allocated
yeah,
to study gun violence.
I had not read that. So,
mm-hmm.
thank you for sharing. All right. So, that is it for today and this week.
Yeah.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.